Save big on everything for your next outdoor project when you shop at Menards. Greenworks 40-volt cordless tools have everything you need to keep your yard looking great. The Greenworks cordless trimmer and edger is lightweight, starts instantly, and comes with a 40-volt battery and charger. Pick one up today, on sale, now through June 1st. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show, he's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Joe George and Brian McDonald filling in for Paul here today. Paul will return on Tuesday. The entire station taking Memorial Day off on Monday. We also got AJ filling in for Sean behind the glass. All right, this final hour of the show, we're going to kind of hit on a little bit of everything. Some Astros, some Texans, some Rockets. We're going to kind of go all over the place before we get to garbage time and then hand it off to Joel and Jeremy on the Killer Bees. So my question for you, Brian, who is the third most important pitcher in the rotation going forward this year? Because we know by a million miles, it's Fromber and Hunter, combination. But who is the most important guy for the Astros to have success the rest of the year?
I think it's clearly a guy, in my opinion, that's not currently in the rotation because he had the random terrible luck of getting hit by a ball while standing in the outfield. Mm-hmm. Was that in Seattle?
I think it was Seattle.
But to me, it's Spencer Arrighetti, because when you look at the options that remain, and I think Spencer Arrighetti was obviously already ahead of Ronel Blanco and Wes Neske, but it certainly adds to it now that you lack the depth that you once had in the starting rotation. But, you know, after Fromber, after Hunter Brown, to me, it's clearly Spencer Arrighetti is the guy with the most upside. Like, if you're going to tell me a non-Hunter Brown, non-Fromber Valdez pitcher is going to go into the playoffs and have a monster out and carry the team to a victory, like, there's no one that has better odds of doing that of the other options to me than Spencer Arrighetti. Like, we saw it second half of last season, sub-3 ERA or just north of 3, maybe. I forget the exact number, but it was a very good ERA, more than a strikeout per inning. He was dominant. I thought he was looking good this season as well in the short time he was available before the injury. But I think it's Spencer Arrighetti because of the upside.
Yeah, yesterday the Astros said that he is out of his cast, but obviously they're going to have to build him up from
nothing.
He's
basically going to have to do spring training again,
yeah,
right?
That's what they said. So he is not throwing the ball just yet, and it sounds like July.
I would guess if he's not throwing at all, I mean, I don't know what you would think, but I would. I mean, he's obviously got to start. He'll have to do the long toss, and then it'll graduate to, you know, bullpen sessions and facing like the simulated games, and then probably at least 3 minor league starts, maybe 4. So yeah, I think we're probably best case looking at, you know, 1st of July.
Yeah, that's
it's tough. It's a rough go because it was such random bad luck. It wasn't like he was. Who was that reliever that like punched
Phil Maton?
Huh?
Phil Maton?
No. Well, yes, but there was another one, a hothead. I'm trying to remember his name now off the top of my head. But there was another guy that went into the dugout and I think punched a phone or something and broke his hand.
Yeah. I don't remember who it is, but yes.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it wasn't like it was something like that where like you could explain away, or even just the almost near certainty that at some point pitchers will all have like an elbow or shoulder injury. Like, it was just complete random dumb luck,
yep,
or bad luck, that is, that ended Arrighetti's season, but certainly delayed it.
I mean, it sucks because it's like, obviously, like, Altuve broke his thumb at the World Baseball Classic, yeah, but he doesn't have to rehab in the way that Arrighetti does.
You don't have to build up. Yeah.
Yeah. And with a young arm too, like, you have to be a little careful. Like, you don't want to rush him back. Like, you don't want to obviously, you want this to lead to something worse, which it easily can, to be honest, if you rush him back. So, like, it has to have time.
Yeah, he's got to stretch out.
So I think Arrighetti is probably the right answer. I do think there is an argument, though, for Lance, like, as, like, the third most important guy, just because, like, because of what he can be. Like, for what it for what it could be, like the 8 strikeout guy that we saw in last night's game. Like if he can be that guy, it is just a different level of pitching versus what any of these other guys, Gusto, any of them can do. So he can just elevate this rotation into a place that you're not expecting it to. So I would say it's Arrigetti and McCullers would be like the next two guys.
Yeah, certainly like back at the baseball card, there's there's definitely the biggest argument there is for Lance. Because if we're going to approach it, at least I know I will approach it this way, of like who has the biggest upside? Like if they hit their ceiling, you know, who has the biggest upside? Who could be the guy that carries your team throughout the regular season, you know, behind Hunter Brown, behind Framber Valdez, and has the chance to carry your team to a postseason win? Like we've seen Lance do it. Now his postseason history is sometimes a little rocky. Like people forget because they won the game. Like he was pretty rocky in that game 7 against the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. Hit a couple guys, didn't even last 5 innings, or right about 5 innings. It wasn't a super long start. Charlie Morton carried him the rest of the way. Obviously, we know game 3 of the World Series in 2022, he was awful, but he's had great moments against the Mariners that same year in the first round in 2022. So Lance has shown the ability to be that guy. I just think because of the arm injuries that Spencer Arrigetti has a better chance of doing it than Lance.
No, I agree. And it's just the waiting game. And really the third most important pitcher on in the Astros pitching staff might just be whoever they trade for. Like it might not, it's probably,
could you argue it's a reliever?
I think right now, I mean, Josh Hader's been the best closer in baseball at this point in the season. But I think just because for the long term, like for the playoffs, like you need another starter.
So I looked at the first half, second half Arrigetti splits I was mentioning earlier. Second half last year, and this was after he had a 5.63 ERA in the first half. Obviously, pretty bad. 3.18 ERA over his final 12 games in the second half of last year with 78 strikeouts and 65 innings. So, I mean, that shows – I mean, that's obviously
– but it's real progress.
Yeah, like 11 starts isn't the biggest sample size. It's not even half a season. But it's, to me, a big enough sample size to show that he has that sort of potential as a high-end number three that would deserve and do well in a playoff start.
I totally agree. I mean, like Jeremy and I have talked about this when we've done our Astros podcast, Inside the Icebox. I would probably try to find some kind of contract to negotiate with Spencer Arrigetti.
Sure, and your time to do that would be now.
Yeah, like while he's hurt.
Yeah,
and
while he's hurt
for you, because
you wouldn't want him to come back. And let's say he comes back July 1st, and then has a July through the end of the season like he did last year. Then your time is over.
And like I'm not trying to pay this guy like 17 like Lance McCullers money and buy out free agency, but like you can pay Arrigetti, buy out some free agency, and have someone that like is reliable. Because you do think about the long term of this roster and this rotation. I mean, Hunter Brown's going to be gone in a couple years. Framber's going to be gone after this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not – I mean, Arrigetti's never going to be a number one for the Astros or like –
well, he
guy.
Might be when Hunter leaves.
But like, yeah. Like so that's why I probably would want to pay him like at least a little bit just to keep him here longer so that way you can find other pieces in your rotation. Because like you just – They just need to be more aggressive. Like they need to pay Arrigetti. They need to pay Cam Smith. Like they need to find a way to just lock up a couple guys and keep them here longer than originally planned.
Isn't the fear though Christian Javier? Because they've done that. You know,
yeah,
not
like Arrigetti's
not so.
He's not Christian Javier.
How so?
He's not that.
I mean, good. I know they're not the same guy, but what do you mean by that?
I mean, like I'm not giving him a contract that like.
Okay.
That
I'm just saying, like you. I mean, I agree with the philosophy of be aggressive with young guys. Try to steal some years of their free agency and save some money. I mean, obviously they've been successful doing that with Bregman and with Yordan, with Altuve, guys like that. But I just worry about it. Like I agree with the philosophy. But when it comes to doing it with starting pitchers, and maybe this is just the PTSD from doing it with Christian Javier, but the arm, like same reason we talked about yesterday, how like I think you were in agreement with me that like I never would give a starting pitcher a second contract unless it's extremely team friendly. the same philosophy kind of leads me down a path of I don't want to do those sort of buyout deals
for sure.
Going into free agency, those for, or buying out those first years of a free agency, because you're then kind of locking yourself into a long-term contract, and you know arm injuries are so frequent with these
pitchers. I mean Christian Javier, you bought out 2 years of free agency. His luxury tax is $12.8 million. His annual payroll the next 2 years when he returns from Tommy John will be $24.4 and $21.4 million.
Eesh.
Like, that's where Jim Crane's right about some of the stuff, the way they've handled this. All right, before we go to break, let's get to Troy on the HRMP listener. And Troy, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Great show. Hey, I just want your thoughts on this. What do you guys question more? Lance getting his true stuff back or his longevity? I question his longevity. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Troy. I think we've seen flashes of his stuff. So I would definitely, if I was going to bet on one, like Lance being, you know, walking off the mound and yelling bleeping nasty at himself, like that Lance McCullers coming back, but getting hurt after four more starts.
Right.
Like that's what I would bet on. I wouldn't bet on this version of Lance pitching the entire year. Like I think the stuff looks like it can still be there. But yeah, I would never bet on Lance McCullers' longevity. Like I would love to. I am very biased towards Lance McCullers. Like I have, we used to have like a very good relationship. We used to do stuff with his charity when I was at 790, and like I hope the best for him. But like I would never bet on his longevity ever.
Yeah, I think of the two, you have to bet on the stuff side, just because the longevity seems like, well, such a long shot. Like there's nothing in the profile to tell me I should bet on the longevity. Now I still have questions about the stuff returning because his curveball and. Well, curveball to lefties. He wasn't throwing as much to righties yesterday. But the curveball and slider, I mean, they produced a lot of swings and misses yesterday. A strikeout, as you mentioned, his swings and misses overall were in the teens. Pretty good performance, but then you also have to look at the other pitches. We talked about it earlier. Like that sinker he threw that got hit for the home run that made it 2-0 Mariners was like a 430-foot just rocket off the center field wall. The sinker was not there. It was like sitting 91 with no movement. The four-seam fastball is getting hit hard. The changeup's getting hit hard. There's a reason he switched to a slider curveball heavy mix, which was good. But I think when the league adjusts, you add that along to the walk rate, and I think we're probably not going to see the production continue if I had to bet. But I think there's a better chance of the production continuing over the longevity.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather bet on – I mean, even though I don't believe anything that – the Astros,
you get Toby Keith, you know, not as good as I once was, but I'm good as once as I ever was.
Like if I had to bet on like something, like I'd rather bet on Christian Javier coming back this season than Lance McCullers finishing it. And like, and I don't think Christian Javier is coming back this year because
no, I don't think so either. We played that game last year with Garcia and Lance. Like they told us last year, like,
well, oh, I don't get
Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers come back late July, like All-Star break.
Well, like didn't Lance, happen. At least we finally got the truth that like he had like his injury was way worse than they thought.
They kind of hinted that he had a second Tommy John.
Yeah, but like Luis Garcia, like he pitched in a minor league game last year.
He tried. And they
now
got
he's out again.
Set back.
I'm waiting for the second.
He's had, what, two setbacks?
Yeah, I'm waiting
or
for the
they ramped up and then had to ramp back down?
Yeah,
or
I'm waiting for a second Tommy John.
There's a greater than 0% chance that we don't see Luis Garcia. Like
ever again?
For an Astro? I mean
100%.
I mean, is it out of the realm of possibility this is a Strasburg situation where his arm is just done? I know he's much younger than Strasburg was at the age that happened, but like, I mean, to see not only the Tommy John, but multiple setbacks
Tommy John in May of 2023, and the last update we got was in April, and it was that Luis Garcia has been shut down from throwing. It sucks. It sucks that Luis Garcia,
I mean,
he was awesome. I loved, he was never like a Cy Young guy, but like,
no,
I loved watching
not.
Him pitch. Yeah, I don't know. Like I never thought we would see Lance pitch for the Astros again, and that's kind of how I feel about Luis
and Lance
Garcia.
Beat Luis Garcia back.
Yeah, like and
I mean that's the
well
biggest...
to be fair, Lance's surgery was first surgery was a year his injury was a year before
it
Luis
was,
Garcia's.
But didn't Lance have potentially a second surgery?
Yeah,
I guess we don't know when that second surgery took place necessarily because the Astros don't give
like
us information.
Yeah, it's tough. Like I feel bad for these guys, but you can't.
I'm just never going to trust an arm until I see it actually recover. And I mean, you've sent him to rehab assignments twice, and both times he's got arm soreness and he gets shut down. Like, like I'm kind of at a believe it when I see it mode at this point with Luis Garcia. Sadly,
football season's not that far away. Where are the Texans the most and the least improved after this offseason going into the 2025 and 2026 season? We'll get to the next year. Joe and Brian filling in for Paul here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to the Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Joe George and Brian McDonald filling in for Paul today here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. It's Ask Joe and Brian Anything on this Friday. A couple of texts here about the Astros we can get into. A quick update on a former friend. Alex Bregman left the game today for the Boston Red Sox. He was rounding first base after a rocket off the Green Monster. Had to call for the trainer and limp off the field.
Yeah, I know you said it looks like a knee.
It looks like a knee.
I always worry when it's non-contact and it ends up being the Achilles.
Because he didn't, like, collapse. So
yeah, if he didn't collapse, then maybe it is the knee. But, yeah, look, obviously, I'm not rooting for him. He's a Red Sox, but I still don't want to see the dude get hurt.
Yeah. All right, couple texts here. From the 832, how depleted do the Astros have to get before Bauer is considered?
You want to answer this one?
He will never pitch for a Major League Baseball team ever again.
Less than zero. Less than 0% chance.
He is blackballed from the league, not just because of the owners. He is blackballed because players' relationships with him.
Especially with the Astros. I mean, he was...
Yeah.
I mean, before fires, he was the guy that went after them just nonstop. I mean, the whole thing with Gerrit Cole and the spider attack. And obviously, with the cheating scandal and everything. Like,
he's also 34.
Yeah, and when was the last time he pitched in a major league game? Like 2021? 2022?
God, I don't remember.
And I thought I'd heard he wasn't even doing that well in Korea or wherever.
No, he has a three. I pull it up here. He has a 3.67 ERA. I mean, this isn't terrible.
Yeah, but what does that translate to here?
Yeah, I just.
3.67 there is what here? I mean, over four. It'll never happen.
No, he'll never pitch here. He'll never pitch in the big leagues again. He would have by now. Teams have been desperate. There has been more Tommy John surgeries in the history of ever, every single season. I mean, they break records every single year in Major League Baseball of guys that have Tommy John. There are 30 teams, and none of them sign him.
I mean, just look at the Astros. I mean, we don't officially know that Ronel Blanco needs Tommy John, although I think we're all assuming
pretty confident
in saying that. Like, I mean, the Astros have lost two guys in the span of what, like a week and a half?
Yep.
I mean, who would be more desperate right now than the Astros after that back-to-back whammy? So
exactly.
It'll never happen.
No, it'll never happen. He can make content with that fat guy on YouTube and strike him out a bunch.
Why are you taking strays at his
at the King of JUCO? I actually think he's Eric Sims. I actually think their stuff's actually kind of funny together. But, like, that's all he is now. He's a content guy. He's not a major league pitcher anymore.
He's a content
guy who makes money in Japan or Mexico or wherever people will ask him to pitch. I get accused a lot of having really bad takes.
Okay, I've heard that. That's mostly Joel accusing you for that.
Yeah, I know. I just want to clarify this is a question from the text line again so I don't get accused of asking this.
Okay.
So the 832 asks, beyond the season, assuming Yordan returns to form, should the Astros consider trading him for a good return or start planning for their future? What would it take for you to consider trading Yordan Alvarez?
See, it's so much more difficult for me to consider it in baseball because, like, you don't – I know you can trade comp picks or whatever. I can't remember the exact rule on that. But it's not like football where you can, you know, trade Deshaun Watson for 3 firsts or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, or whatever the – like, the baseball equivalent of that doesn't really exist. So that complicates it for me because anything – you could trade for, obviously, a bunch of top prospects, which would be the answer. Like, whatever the Juan Soto trade was, like, that would be what I would want. But I don't even know if that would be worth it to me because, I mean, what's the percentage of odds on each of those guys that, like, in the Juan Soto trade are coming through? Like, not specifically them, but just guys of that caliber. Like, Forrest Whitley was once, like, a top 5 overall prospect, has pitched like 3 innings in his major league career. Like, especially in the pitching side, I don't even believe that there are such things as pitching prospects because they're so injury prone, they don't come through. But these players are so far away that, like, it feels like I'd just be throwing Yordan away.
No, you have to trade him for players that are on the cusp. Like, when you trade Tucker, you got a player that was in right field on day one. And now I know that wasn't the original plan, but the plan was for Cam Smith to be in right field this year. I think that was very clear from the get-go. I think if you were to get to a point where, like how do the Astros get to a point where they trade Yordan Alvarez? I mean, you have to – it's a total teardown. I mean,
it'd be a complete rebuild.
It is trading Yordan. It is trading probably Yiner, probably Pena.
Hunter Brown. It'd be the only
– it's a full teardown, or you're never trading that guy.
But the problem with even considering that as a hypothetical is I can never see the Astros deciding to do that. I mean, I don't think Jim Crane, his mindset would allow them to decide to completely tear it down to the nubs and build up from the foundation.
No, because we see what's happening right now.
I think they might be in their Carlos Lee era, but that doesn't even necessarily, I guess the Astros have done this once before. 2011 would have been, they traded away Oswalt, they traded away Berkman. I mean, Yordan, probably a better player than those two.
Mm-hmm.
So the Astros have done this before, but I just don't see Jim Crane taking that route.
No, I think it would be, if this were to really be ever a real topic of conversation, that I think is like this is likely to happen. I think it's not until it's a Kyle Tucker situation.
How many years left does Yordan have at this point?
Yeah, let's see. Our Wi-Fi is so terrible. It's incredible. I think it was like 4. I think
it
was like 4.
It was a 6-year deal. I just couldn't remember when he signed it.
Yeah. His last year is 2028.
Okay.
So this
year and 3 more.
Yeah. I think that's the only time.
So 2027?
Yeah.
That would be the earliest they would consider it?
In my opinion.
Unless
really fall apart.
Yeah, basically, if all of the question marks you have about guys struggle, let's say last night was a blip for Jose Altuve and he sucks the rest of the year. Christian Walker sucks for the rest of the year. Yiner Diaz sucks for the rest of the year. I even think in that scenario, they wouldn't trade him. What is the path to get better at that point? I mean, that you have to hit on all the prospects that you get back? I mean, how many of the prospects do you think you're actually hitting on? It's such a gamble. I wouldn't even consider it until 2027, and your franchise would have to be in such a rock bottom place that I don't even see them being there.
Yeah, the only thing I'm trying to figure out too with it's funny that the timing works out because we've talked about this a couple times the last 48 hours now, is the strike.
Lockout. Because it'd be 2027, right?
Yeah. I'm more curious how the contract rollover is going to work. Because obviously you have the Dodgers who have all this crazy money on their payroll.
Yeah, the deferred money to Shohei.
They can't just get rid of it.
No,
why the Dodgers are doing what they're doing. That's why people are pissed. It's because the Dodgers are cheating the system. They know that there's going to be major structural changes in baseball. And because of all this deferred money, they're not going to be able to hit edit undo when they redo the contract. They're just going to be locked into these deals. Yordan Alvarez, his contract's not going to change.
It would just hit, basically you would just hit pause on the contract, right?
Yeah.
So if in 2027 they go on strike, he has 2 years left. Whenever they resume, he would have 2 years left, right?
Yeah. I think we're at least 2 years away. I mean, I think you would have to miss the playoffs this year in 2025 and then miss the playoffs again in 2026. And then I think Jim Crane would be open to tearing it down.
Yeah, be like a 70-win team or less for a couple of years in a row.
Yeah, so I think that's the only way Yordan would ever, honestly, ever get traded. It would
otherwise known as he won't be.
Yeah, I would be stunned if that actually happened, unless he demanded to be traded.
I couldn't see that.
No, I couldn't.
I think he look.
The only real wrinkle with Yordan is the Altuve stuff. Is if Altuve at some point also can't play left field, what do you do? If you have 2 DHs on your team, 2 guys that can't play on the field, that's the only wrinkle that I think would be. It would make it more complicated.
Yeah, what point is it? I don't even know what point that would come, but yeah, that would be. I mean, you're kind of there now. I mean,
Altuve's been good left.
He's been fine and left. I guess that's too harsh to say they're there now. But it, I mean, it's still kind of a roster construction problem, mm-hmm. where you have guys. I mean, you maybe even throw Yiner in this mix that you might rather play at DH than at their actual defensive position. So it's still kind of a roster construction problem now, but yeah, that would be a problem down the road. Like if Altuve's, you know, foot speed deteriorates and the natural progression of time gets to a point where he can't even play in left field, then he has to be a DH as he chases 3,000 hits, then that would be a problem because obviously you don't want Yordan playing in left field every day, but. Like I don't know what the answer would be in that situation.
Yeah, it's you have to choose.
There really isn't a
good. You'd have to choose.
You'd either have to live with the liability in the field, or you'd have to choose one.
Or Yordan's learning first base.
Like, no. I mean, from everything I've read, he was a disaster there. That's not an option.
Yeah. All right. Well, when we get back, we'll get to what we're going to talk about here originally, which is the Houston Texans. Where are they most and least improved? Plus, if you have any questions for Ask Joe and Brian, anything Friday here on the Paul Gallant Show. That's all coming up next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe and Brian filling in for Paul here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. AJ in for Sean. Where do you think the Texans are the most improved going into the season? Obviously, we could be wrong. But, right, on paper.
I look, it's tough to say from an improvement standpoint because they didn't add a whole lot, right? Like, there wasn't, especially since they traded out of the first round, right? They didn't add the big splashy free agents like they did the year before. They didn't have a first-round pick. So there wasn't, like, an overhaul at any position as far as, like, improving the actual overall talent from the year prior to me. But I guess I would have to say it'd be the wide receiver room. I really liked what they did at the wide receiver room because you go from a spot where you have the obvious, you know, without a doubt, alpha Nico Collins. And then it's, you know, Stephon Diggs, who's a little older. If he'd come back this year, he'd been coming back off an ACL injury. Mm-hmm. You're not really sure how long he's going to be able to keep playing at that high level. And then obviously you had Tank Dell, who is, you know, a walking season ending injury. Obviously, extremely bad luck. Nothing that's his own fault. I mean, the first injury was he was in line blocking around the goal line. The second one, some random wide receiver off the street like ran the same route as him and clipped him out in the Chiefs game. So this is not a injury prone situation. This is not is he soft and missing games when he should be playing, like maybe we sometimes talk about with Yordan. Like Tank Dell was just the unluckiest guy. I didn't even mention the fact that he got shot in an offseason. So like, I mean, he's had,
honestly, I forgot.
Yeah, I know. Like it's crazy the guy got shot. We barely even talk about it because of all the other crazy injuries he's had. So, but I think the Texans have taken the wide receiver room. And they've not only did you add Christian Kirk, who I think, even if Tank Dell was healthy, I think Christian Kirk, at least for a year or two, would be a better version of what you would have hoped for with Tank Dell. I think he's proven to be more productive. Now, he's also had some injury problems, but I think he's a slight upgrade to what Tank Dell or Stephon Diggs did from the slot the year prior. He's obviously younger than Stephon Diggs. But then you added two highly regarded wide receivers out of Iowa State with the Jalen's, Higgins and Knoll. I think the Texans have gone from a spot where, yes, they had three wide receivers, but one guy was old and one guy keeps getting injured, to now they have four wide receivers. And hopefully, knock on wood, you don't have those same injury or same concerns, at least not with age. Maybe you have the injury concern with Christian Kirk because he's had two season-ending injuries, I believe, in a row, two back-to-back years. But I think the Texans have not only definitely improved the depth of the position, but 100%. I think you could also argue they've improved the talent.
Yeah, I think the talent is better. I think the depth is better because like
the depth is unquestioned.
Diggs wasn't really that good. Like
I thought he wasn't prime Diggs. Yeah. I thought he was still 85% of what he had been.
He could move the chains, but he couldn't push the ball really.
Right, he was a slot receiver at that point.
Now CJ obviously didn't have a lot of protection, but like. The wide receiver position is deeper. I think it is more talented now. Who do you think is like the current guys on the roster, like going into the season? Like we know that we're going to have Nico, Kirk, just both Jalen Noel and Higgins. are on there. That's four wide.
Four guys, and you probably have. You probably keep six wide receivers, so there's two spots left.
Hutchinson and Mechie.
Plus, you have Justin Watson and Braxton Berrios on the roster.
And Berrios, to me, feels like a shoe-in.
Do you see? I don't know if he is because Jalen Knoll can play special teams.
That's true.
So yeah, I think if you think Knoll is going to contribute on special teams, then that kind of takes Berrios' roster spot.
I kind of like Knoll as the guy,
I do too.
The guy. I mean, Higgins is good too, but like the way that people have talked about Knoll coming out and what he can bring to this roster, I think it might have been Steve Smith was saying his bold take was that Knoll will just replace Christian Kirk on the depth chart, not because of injury.
Todd McShay was also very bullish on Jalen Knoll. Yeah. He also liked Higgins a lot as well, but he called Jalen Knoll his favorite wide receiver in the class. Like he really liked Jalen Knoll. Especially if Higgins hits his potential, his ceiling, and you have those two big. Because he's basically from a body size comp, like basically a clone of Nico Collins. You had those two big 6'4" wide receivers out there taking coverage deep. Dragging the defenders, away from the line of scrimmage, Jalen Knoll underneath is going to be a monster.
Yeah, I think it's super easy the other way. The least improved position is
the offensive line. Yeah,
tore it down by trading Tunsil. I think you're trying to culture reset in a way.
That's the selling point.
But what's crazy is that
I don't know if I believe it, but that's the selling point.
I also don't think it's going to be worse this year.
You can't tell me they improved their overall talent for the position group.
No, but can it really be worse?
Look, you replaced Kenyon Green with two guys that were just as bad as Kenyon Green. Like the stat came out right after they acquired Ed Ingram through trade and then signed Lincoln Tomlinson as far as 1-on-1 pressure rate allowed by interior offensive linemen, well, guards specifically. Kenyon Green was third worst. Tomlinson and Ed Ingram were first and fourth worst. Like, Kenyon Green's a disaster. We got to get rid of him. Agreed. Okay, cool. You ship him off in what was a great trade to get C.J. Gardner-Johnson here. Great trade by Nick Caserio. But you replaced, that terrible, worst offensive guard of the game with two guys just as bad.
Yeah, I think the thought process there is that...
And same thing with Shaq. Shaq Mason was a disaster, but you got guys that are just as bad.
I think the thought is that Popovich can come in as the now head offensive line coach. And Lakin Tomlinson was good at one point, right?
Are we going back to the football card?
Yeah. And you're betting on.
Because that's kind of what you could say about Shaq Mason. He was good. Yeah. Well, okay, great. Yeah. But he's not good now.
But clearly your coach sucked.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the other problem with it.
You brought in a coach who had never coached in the system before. And it was very clear he didn't know what he was doing. If you're scheming things better and your coaching is better, then it should be Nick Caley should be able to get this thing going in a better direction. Now, I don't love that Cole Popovich is here.
I don't like that they hired from within for a group that was that much of a disaster.
And it's Patriots South again.
And that's the other part I don't like. It's the same thing with Nick Caley.
Or John Carroll.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. Nick Caley was also tight ends coach with the Patriots while Caserio was there. That's the other part of it I don't like. There's no doubt that the offensive line was the biggest failure of last season. And they replaced – and their fix was promoting from within and hiring a guy that was a Caserio, buddy in New England.
Yeah.
With no play calling experience.
I really think it was
– That was their fix.
We tried D'Amico's buddy. Now we're going to try Nick's instead of
– I guess. It's just
I don't see, much collaboration here. Now, I could be wrong.
What do you mean?
It's just a guess. This is not based on any fact. But I really see you hired D'Amico's hire and it failed, and then now it's Nick Caserio's turn to make the hire.
I think there's also the Sean McVay thing of teams will just hire anybody who has stood next to Sean McVay at some point.
That's very true.
I don't know if you remember this, but the Cardinals literally put it in the press release back in the day when they hired Cliff Kingsbury that he and Sean McVay were friends.
I forgot about that. All right, he's Brian McDonald. I'm Joe George. When we get back, we'll wrap up the show with Garbage Time before Jeremy and Joel take over on the Killer Bees right here on ESPN 97.5 and
92.5. 10 to 10. Oh, I love trash.
Garbage Time.
It's garbage.
Starts now. I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Joe and Brian filling in for Paul. Final segment as we will get ready for the weekend. And everyone will be off on Monday for Memorial Day. And then Paul will return on Tuesday. So to do garbage time, to start garbage time today, we will start off. Well, we'll honor Paul Gallant. Because this is a very Paul Gallant story. Because as many people know, somehow Paul gets push notifications about the WNBA more than anyone I've ever met in my life.
I don't think I've ever gotten... I get the ESPN push notifications, and actually, most of the time, I don't even open them. But I've never noticed that any of them are about the WNBA.
No, Paul has something turned on, and he doesn't realize it. And
he's got the White Knight setting turned on?
Yeah.
The Ally setting turned on?
But I'm sure Paul got this one, okay? ESPN sent out this push notification. Mm-hmm. That said, historically bad shooting. Angel Reese goes 0-for-7 from within 4 feet of basket to tie most misses from that distance in WNBA over the past 10 seasons.
Man.
The Chicago Sky have also started their season a minus 60.
How many games are they playing?
Two.
Now it won't load for me. I had it up earlier. Now it won't load for me. Shout out to our Wi-Fi. But we're 100% sure this notification's real?
I've seen it.
Because man, that is a lot of shade thrown at Angel Reese.
I'm trusting Barstool, which might be a mistake.
Well, that feels 50-50.
But they're normally pretty good about, it's not.
Yeah, Angel Reese.
Regardless, like, the stats true, so.
It's a good story. Like, I even if it's not true, I want to go with it because it's a good story. But, man, Angel Reese, like... Has anyone, like, people, when they speak out against Caitlin Clark, speak out against the hype, but has anyone been more overhyped than Angel Reese? Wasn't she, like, the number two overall pick?
She wasn't even the first pick.
Well, I know she wasn't the first pick, but...
No, by the Sky.
Oh, she wasn't the... Okay, but she was still pretty high in the draft, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And she can't shoot. She's the equivalent, like, is she the WNBA equivalent of, like, I don't know, Sean Bradley? Like, just there because she's tall? Just the big body in the lane?
I don't know, because she doesn't even look like that big of a body compared to some of the other girls on the court, women on the court. I think this whole Caitlin Clark stuff it's all so stupid.
The thing on their opening day where Angel Reese freaked out for Caitlin Clark having the most mundane, like, grab foul to prevent a layup that I've ever seen was unreal.
So I don't have an issue with that just because I think it's like they actually don't like each other.
Well, like, I know, like, that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, the reaction was not warranted from Caitlin's action. And not that I'm even a Caitlin Clark stan, I don't care. I haven't watched her play. But, like, what Caitlin Clark did in that moment by just, like, she didn't even completely wrap her up. She didn't shove. She didn't pull her down. She just put, like, her arms around her so Angel Reese couldn't get her arms up to lay it in.
I think Angel's reaction is fine because, like, they just don't like each other. Yeah. But then everyone else made such a big deal about it. That's like, why are you making... Like, it's just clear they don't like each other.
No.
So, like, why she reacted that way.
Yeah, 100%. But, yeah.
But she's just... Angel Reese just, like, she sucks at basketball. Like, there's no way to put it. Like, she's not good.
0-for-7 from inside 4 feet?
I mean, how is it possible? Like...
But hey, she's got that meal at McDonald's, though.
Yeah,
so.
But, like, Caitlin
at least
Clark,
she's cashing checks.
This blew my mind. She's third all-time in triple-doubles in the WNBA.
Caitlin Clark?
Yeah.
How many does she have?
That was the first game into her second season.
She's third all-time?
She's third all-time already. Like, that is absurd.
I hope the next part of the story is because she has one.
No, it's not.
Okay, all right, okay.
But, like, to have
that would have made the story even funnier.
Like to be third all time already, like, it's crazy. All right, you got one.
All right, so I'm going to try to do this one Granado style based off the headline. Florida woman arrested after punching officer's testicles, refusing to pay tab at steakhouse. Do you feel like you should be able to punch an officer's testicles after not paying your steakhouse bill there, Joe?
Was my bill wrong? And I was upset, and he tried to intervene?
So, okay, here's more of the story. I'll give some more detail. A 32-year-old woman was arrested for allegedly refusing to pay her tab at a steakhouse in downtown Ocala, OCALA. I'm pretty sure that's Florida. And punching a police officer in the testicles after she was escorted outside the restaurant. This happened on May 6th, and not that long ago, at a place called Mark's Prime Steakhouse. Never heard of it. And the woman was arrested again for refusing to pay her tab. Apparently, when one of the officers entered the restaurant, King was observed. I just gave out her last name. Oh, well. Was observed sitting at the bar, and the report stated that she appeared to be intoxicated. A manager informed the officer that King was refusing to pay her tab, which totaled, want to take a guess?
$30.
No, actually, quite a bit more. $99.53.
Okay.
Middle of the day, and she's running up a bill at the steakhouse at $99.53. So the officer assisted her out to the patio area, I guess, to have the conversation about paying your bill. And then the lady punched him in the testicles. Mm. So
just pay your bill.
Yeah.
Just pay it.
Apparently, a bystander was actually assisted or offered to assist her in paying the bill, but the woman who, again, was intoxicated, was highly agitated and yelled at the woman to just leave her alone.
Yeah, this is...
I think the phrase at one point, "Do you think you're better than me," also came out. I would have to guess.
No, I think it's fair to say...
Florida.
...that this lady overreacted.
Overreacted more than Angel Reese, to tie back into the previous?
Yes. Mainly because she's drunk and, like, you gotta... calm yourself.
Who's most likely at ESPN 97.5 to refuse to pay their tab and then punch an officer in the testicles? Is that person usually in this time slot?
Probably. I don't really know what my other options would be.
I think Paul is obviously very respectful of police officers, but I do think he could rage himself into that situation.
Yeah, I don't know who else would be on the list. By the way, as we wrap up this segment, Todd the Show said this, and I went and fact checked it. You said that you thought one triple double might put her third all time.
Mm-hmm.
No, three does. All right, that will do it for the show. He's Brian. I'm Joe.
I'm glad that I was close.
Jeremy and Joel are next on the Killer Bees. It's good hanging out with everyone again for these last 2 days. Paul will be back on Tuesday. Peace.
Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. Shop our huge selection of concrete. From general-purpose concrete to specialty sand and mortar mixes, we have what you need to get any job done right. View our entire selection online or in-store today and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on everything for your next outdoor project when you shop at Menards. Greenworks 40-volt cordless tools have everything you need to keep your yard looking great. The Greenworks cordless trimmer and edger is lightweight, starts instantly, and comes with a 40-volt battery and charger. Pick one up today, on sale, now through June 1st. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.